beat the Georgia Bulldogs, you're gonna feel the bulldog.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Row 60, a Georgia football podcast. My name is Clark Gaines. Joining me today, as always, Adam Thornton.
Boom! Woo!
Adam, that boom sounded like a boom that happens after you win an SEC championship.
Hey, championship boom. Been blessed. 4 years of doing this podcast, Clark. And how many booms, championship booms, have I been fortunate enough to be able to deliver in that four-year span, man? National championship, SEC championships, man. Unbelievable. Unbelievable night in Atlanta, Georgia. Back-to-back SEC champions yet again in the 12-team playoff, second year of it. Georgia gets a bye week as a top four seed. Can't wait. Can't wait, and it's just a different feel going into the playoff this year after another SEC championship win in Atlanta, Georgia on Saturday night, Clark.
Absolutely. Man. Dogs win 28-7. They beat the stinking Alabama Crimson Tide. Kirby Smart's third SEC championship in the past 5 years. Yep. Inject that into my vein, into your vein.
Put it in.
I don't like
right
needles,
there.
But I would inject it.
Right there. I'm telling you, man, that was we needed that, Clark.
Yeah.
We needed that. That's something, a lot of years of frustration in that stadium. I know we talked about what happened in Indianapolis, that special night in January of 2022. That was good for it. But we needed to beat them in that building. We needed to beat them in the SEC championship game. And to do it in that fashion, man, beating them by three touchdowns was poetic. It was glorious. It was gold. And I tell you, I want to just go around that whole stadium. It was just going there with some sagebrush, lighting it on fire, and just exorcising demons out of the place. That's what happened. That's what last Saturday night in Atlanta was. It was an exorcism. And it was something that was, as a Georgia fan who has had their hearts ripped out in that stadium or in your living room watching Georgia have their hearts ripped out in the stadium by that team, it was all worth after what happened Saturday night.
Agreed. I absolutely agreed. Adam, I'm going to do something. First of all, welcome to show number 138. I'm going to do something I've never done on this podcast. I'm going to play a little music here.
All right, play a little music then.
Before I play it, I want to kind of set the tone here.
And I have no clue what you're about to play. But
I know. It's going to be great.
Okay.
I just want you to understand you don't have to participate here.
Are we going to get monetized by this music?
We might. I don't know. We'll see. Copyright strike?
That's what I was trying to say. Yeah, copyright strike. Yeah.
If you got young ears in the car, you may want to skip ahead just a little bit. Nothing crazy, but
just a word that might
offend some people.
Very intrigued what's happening here.
But, okay. Adam, in 2012, I heard this song for the very first time after Alabama won the game. Confetti falling, SEC championship. We had our hearts ripped out. You mentioned that just a minute ago. I heard this song, and it was played by the Alabama marching band or the Million Dollar Band, whatever they call them, and it ticked me off. And so right now,
okay,
I want a little payback.
All right.
I want to play the reverse Rammer Jammer.
Okay.
I'm going to take a page out of Auburn's book,
which is weird. Okay.
But I'm going to do this, and you're just going to have to follow along.
I'm following along because I have no idea the words.
Hey, Bama.
Hey, Bama.
Yeah. Hey, Bama. Hey, Bama. Here we go.
We just beat the hell out of you. Rammer, jammer, yellow hammer, go to hell, Alabama.
Okay, all right, sorry. I love that. That was great.
Look,
I love it. That's pageantry right there, baby.
Listen, that's a cathartic release for me. I just had to do it one time.
Love it.
Oh, it felt good.
Love it.
But yeah, dogs on top. Welcome to show number 138. It's going to be a good one.
Man.
On this episode, we're going to be talking about the game day atmosphere per usual. It was a different feel this year. Last year was a lot different.
That it was.
And then this year felt like a normal SEC championship matchup. Georgia-Alabama, two heavyweight title contenders. We'll have a weekly concession stands report on the show, Clark's Fun Facts, Georgia's offense, defense, special teams breakdowns. And then at the very end, we'll talk about last week's conference championship games. And then moving forward, we have a little bit of news about what's to come in this week and then the following week. So be on the lookout.
Dive right into it, man.
Yeah. All righty. Let's start with some shout-outs here, Adam.
Okay.
I'm going to start out with Mr. Avery Shirley. Avery became a patron this past week. And I believe Avery, I could be wrong about this, but I think he's somewhere in the Atlanta area. Not totally sure. He didn't add his address or whatever in Patreon, so I don't know yet.
Okay.
But anyway, Thank you, Avery. I appreciate that. We appreciate that here at Row 60. You becoming a patron and supporting the show, that helps us to get to more road games and to travel places and to make more content for everybody. So
that's good. We appreciate that, Avery. Good on you, man, for joining the patrons, going into the postseason right here now as far as the playoff cranking up and some trips on the horizon. Fun ride. Three more games, man. More W's in the top of the mountain again. Mm. Just couldn't be in a better position right now if you're a Georgia Bulldog.
Absolutely. Well, if you're not on Patreon and you want to unlock exclusive Row 60 content, just visit patreon.com/row60, or you can download the Patreon app on your phone and search Row 60. It's just $5 a month. And once again, every penny we reinvest into the program helps us to travel to more games and produce more Georgia football content.
Yeah,
so, absolutely. Thank you so much, Avery. We appreciate that, brother. All right, let's talk about the game day atmosphere, Adam.
Love it.
What do you think? What were your thoughts?
It was electric. Back like the good Lord intended the SEC championship game day atmosphere to be in Atlanta.
Yeah?
It reminded me, Clark, of what it was like in 2012, man. In 2018, back when this game was still, there wasn't this question everybody has now in the nation of if this game should be played or not. Back when it meant something. Back in the late 2000s and early 2010s, man, and even when Mercedes-Benz Stadium, the first couple of years it was built. But now it's got this just stigma around it that there's this conversation of we need to do away with it, and it's going to hurt teams and yada, yada, all that stuff, man. But last night, what you experienced as a Georgia fan, if you were in that Mercedes-Benz Stadium or if you were in your living room or at a watch party somewhere, that joy you felt, you wouldn't have had that joy had there been no SEC championship game to play. Mm-hmm. That's another memory you could put in the collection, man, of watching Georgia football and sharing with your friends and family that you wouldn't have if there was no SEC championship game. So being able to have that, one of the top wins I've seen Georgia have, was just unbelievable. Took me back, man, and I thought it was great.
Yep.
From both sides, the stadium was buzzing. The kickoff game day atmosphere, before the kick, going into the stadium at the fanfare, everything was great.
I agree.
Love this football game.
Yeah, night and day difference from last year. Obviously, last year we got Texas. A lot of their fans, I guess, didn't travel for, I'm sure, a multitude of reasons. Number one, they probably thought they were going to get beat again, in which they did. And then secondly, you know, I mean, it's a much further path to get there. I mean, you have to fly to Atlanta from Texas, whereas a lot of Alabamians, I think that's how you say that.
Alabamians?
Okay. Yeah, I think all so. Right. Residents of Alabama, they were able to just drive on in. So,
yeah.
You know, that definitely made a difference. But I would say, generally speaking, it's kind of hard to tell when you have both teams in red, but or a shade of red. I would say it was about 60% Georgia fans, probably 40% Alabama fans.
Right.
And that's typically how it is when Alabama comes to town. But, yeah, I think it was a great showing by the Georgia faithful. We showed up. We were loud, which was exciting. Finally.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, we kind of did create a home field advantage. But, Adam, you made a great point. You know, you've been saying that if we keep winning in this SEC championship game, especially with it being in Mercedes-Benz, they're probably going to look to move this game elsewhere just so that there's not that stigma that, oh, this is a home game for Georgia, right?
Yeah, I just think that'll be a topic of conversation. I haven't heard it. I'm just assuming that. Just the way of the world now and where college football is, and you have just some people just can't accept things and just wanting to change tradition and everything else, especially with Texas and Oklahoma coming into the league and expanded further west. And what, 13 years ago we did it with Texas A&M and Missouri, and Atlanta it's the perfect spot for it. It's the Southeastern Conference Championship. Atlanta's the capital of the South. In 92, they decided it should be in Atlanta. It was the perfect thing it was in Birmingham first, but then when the Dome was built, I think in 94 was the first year it was in Atlanta. It goes to Atlanta, and that's where it's been ever since, where it should be. But I just feel like with Texas now in the league, and they're building a new stadium in Nashville, I think they'll start a rotation or kind of push for it to be rotated between like Dallas, Atlanta, and Nashville or something, and like cover all these different areas of the Southeastern Conference, right?
Yeah.
And especially with Georgia dominating the SEC championship, as getting a spot in it, and then now back-to-back like this. And I think that'll be a topic that'll come up. And like I said again, I haven't heard that. That's just my opinion.
Sure.
And just, you know, the trend of where it's been in college football now.
Yeah, that's a great theory, or maybe prediction would be the right term. But, Adam, you said this on the call-in show the other night. Shout out to everybody that joined us for the call-in show.
Yep,
One of our biggest, I think our second biggest. The first was actually that national championship game we played in 22 against Alabama. That call-in show was awesome. Legendary. But anyway, this was a great one as well. But you were saying on last week's call-in show that you think the quintessential weather for an SEC championship game, though obviously the game is played indoors, you still have to have a certain environment outside the stadium.
That's right. You got
to. So tell us about that.
I mean, I think the good Lord intended the SEC championship to be played in overcast, dreary, cold weather in the South.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just the way it was intended from the beginning.
And that's how we got it.
Yeah, my favorite memories in the SEC championship were walking into stadiums like that, where it was just gray skies and nice and frigid, cold. Mm-hmm. Man, you're wearing a sweatshirt, you're freezing, and then you're going into a controlled environment. And we get it again on Saturday. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, it just the good Lord just painted the perfect picture.
He did. He absolutely did.
So I looked at it.
SEC fanfare was awesome, too. If you've never been to an SEC championship game, what they do is they have this – if you know where the Georgia World Congress Center is, they essentially put the SEC fanfare down in the bottom floor.
Yeah.
And that's where they do game day. So if you watch game day, it's in that big building. There's a lot happening down there. You know, they've got food, drinks, games, all sorts of stuff. Our patrons have seen us before running the 40-yard dash down there.
Yeah.
That was fun. We didn't do that this year. And we won.
Exactly.
Maybe there's something to that.
No, a lot of things that we did differently.
Yeah.
A lot of people did differently, and then look at the result. Just saying.
I know.
That's what we talked about in the call-in show Friday mm-hmm. night. What are you going to do? What are you going to give up? What do you got to do different this time against Alabama as a fan to hopefully have different results? And the we look at what the you know the end result was.
We as fans did our part.
Exactly. We did. And then the players did their part. And,
right.
And then there we go, 28-7.
Yeah, absolutely. And also, Adam, while we're there, I want to shout out these people as well. Craig from Stockbridge, we met him at SEC Fan Fair. Richard from Smyrna, I met him, I think, right beside the Brewster's ice cream cart, which is great.
Good.
And then Nicholas from Savannah. Nicholas is a young lad, I think an eighth grader, and he recognized us as we were walking back to the car.
That's
he said,
awesome.
Hey, y'all are the Row 60 guys. I said, we sure are. So, good Nicholas, deal. Shout out to you. Richard and Craig, good to meet y'all. It's always great to meeting people as we go and travel to these games that love the dogs and, you know, also follow along with what we're doing here at Row 60. So appreciate that. Appreciate the support. Love y'all.
Love it.
All right, next thing on the list, and we're about to get to the football talk, the meat and potatoes. But we got to talk about the weekly concession stands report. Adam, we talked about it last week. Mercedes-Benz Stadium concessions.
Elite.
No other word for it,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, it's elite. Yeah. Absolutely.
Unmatched. I went ahead. Look, you don't fix something that's broke. And Brewster's ice cream is just undefeated, man. I got a bowl, a waffle bowl. I talked about this last week. Cookies and cream. Really, really good.
Yeah.
What'd you get?
I didn't get anything except just lemonade. I've talked about getting the souvenir cup, my collection of souvenir cups. Added another SEC championship cup to the collection. So I got my Minute Maid lemonade. Sipped on that. And I think you got it listed here. I'm looking ahead. The garlic knots.
Yeah.
I took your wife's garlic knots, a couple of them.
So let's talk about that. I asked her. I was sitting down today on the recliner, and I was asking Caitlin, hey, you know, what did you get? She said garlic knots. I was like, oh, yeah, totally forgot about that. I was so locked into the game.
Yeah.
I totally forgot I even had a garlic knot. But I asked her, I said, you know, what was your rating? She gave me a 4 out of 10.
Really?
What would you say?
I would have went 7 out of 10. Oh, yeah, I was a big advocate of it. Big advocate of those garlic knots, man. I think I've had better garlic knots.
Okay.
I mean, I'm not going to sit here and say that you can't go to a nice Italian restaurant and get a better garlic knot because obviously you can go get one there. I mean, but for a stadium garlic knot and an alternate offering of food that you get at Mercedes-Benz Stadium, because, I mean, where do you go at a football game and get garlic knots at, right?
Not so, many.
I mean, being able to just have that offering is a luxury in itself, right, Clark?
Yeah.
So being able to do that, it made it good. Watch the football.
Yeah.
I enjoyed it. The two I ate, good to me, 7 out of 10.
Man, I don't know. It seemed like there was way too much garlic. A little too doughy, but I don't know.
Nah.
Yeah, I mean, to each their own.
Yeah, that's right.
Some people like more garlic. I just, I don't know. Tastes funny. All right, moving on here. We've got Clark's fun facts. I've got two for us here. Number one, Kirby Smart. I didn't realize this. This is wild. And I actually should add, I need to change this. I was about to say Kirby Smart is 17-0 when his team blocks a kick, whether that's a punt, a field goal, when they block a kick. He's now 18-0.
18-0 now when Kirby Smart. Yeah. Wow.
Isn't that wild?
Special teams, man.
Yeah, absolutely. Kirby Smart is also 2-0 against Alabama in rematch games.
That's it.
You got to love that part.
I love it, man. I love it. After getting beat in the regular season or the meeting before last, of course, in 21 was the SEC championship, beat them in the national championship game. Getting beat in the regular season this year, beating them in the SEC championship game. Yeah, I mean, you're just not going to beat them twice.
Right.
Not going to beat them twice.
Mm-hmm. And you're not going to beat this Georgia offense, man. We played really well last night. So let's talk about the offense, break it down. Mike Bobo and company. Let's start with this. Three out of our four scoring drives started in opponent's territory.
Love it.
Three out of four. That is how you win these kinds of games. That is complimentary football at its finest. You take the opponent's momentum, you steal it, and then you create your own.
Absolutely, man.
So I thought that was really interesting. We had very favorable field position, but I saw some Alabama fan complain about it on Twitter, like, oh, well, Georgia started in our territory nearly every time they scored, and it's like, yeah, but I mean, we did what we had to do. I mean, we stepped up. It's not like
The team put themselves in position to get there, to get the offense there, and then the offense capitalized by having that good a field position. Right? Yeah. They didn't get the ball on Alabama's 20 and then turn it right back over to them.
Exactly.
They capitalized and scored for it, and then that's a result of a 28-7 win.
Yeah.
And we talked about that, Clark. We said, man, you know, the difference in a lot of these games that have been so close against them, whether it's in Tuscaloosa, Athens, and Atlanta, wherever we have played them in the past, has been Georgia losing the turnover margin. But also the differential in the game of the points scored being that Alabama off that Georgia turnover has been able to drive the ball downfield and score points, whether it be a field goal or a touchdown. And many of these games have ended in 3 or 7-point losses, right? Around in that range. So right when we got that interception or the block punt, being able to capitalize on that, man, and build that momentum was something we hadn't done in the past against them that we did Saturday, and you just knew then it just felt different. It felt different there in the middle of the first quarter that this game's a little bit different than the ones in the past. Mm-hmm.
Another thing I think that was wildly different, I know it was wildly different, was we controlled the clock way, way better than what we did in September. Listen to this. I did not realize we kept the ball for this long. We had the football offensively for 36 minutes.
There we go,
and 52 seconds. Nearly 37 minutes. That's crazy, to their 23 minutes and 8 seconds. So, I mean, you won the time of possession battle for sure. You capitalized on Alabama's mistakes. And, man, I mean, you got out to a hot start. Finally, that is something else that we've always been wanting to see against Alabama, at least the past few years, was a hot start. But it seems like they were the ones that got off the right foot always. And then, you know, we flipped the script this game.
Yeah, I mean, it was something we talked about, that the two times that Georgia's played against Kalen DeBoer's Alabama teams, we've gotten the whole 14-0, even larger than that, some deficits early in the first quarter. You're into the first quarter in a huge deficit, man, and definitely not controlling the time of possession, but definitely not controlling the pace of the game that you want to play and the style of game that you want to play that you're able to do Saturday. And I think that was big. You know, Georgia gets the ball first, Clark, and we get a big gain, get a first down, then shoot ourselves in the foot with a penalty, have to punt. We're like, man, we just got to – last thing we need to do is – give them the ball, their first offensive drive, they go down and score. Here we go again, right? But defense bows up, and then here we go. And it just seemed like ever since then, we just didn't look back. Defense all day was just complete different defense than we saw them play against Alabama and Athens. All the credit in the world to Glenn Schumann for that, Clark, and just these guys who have grown up, won these roles, and going in there and just connected in the leadership on this team, man. It's special.
Yeah,
it's special.
It is. What was also special was it was seeing our offensive line just play out of their minds. I really thought our offensive line stepped up in a big way. Not that they haven't been playing well all season, but you get obviously we lost Drew Bobo, and you know, we don't have what was his backup?
Cortez.
Cortez. Wow. What's his last name? Not Smith. Anyway. So we're down to Malachi Tolliver, and last week we talked about, oh, Malachi Tolliver, he's a redshirt freshman. He looked rough against Georgia Tech. He hasn't had a lot of snaps, but, man, Malachi Tolliver played Smith. His tail off, which, you know, we were concerned with last week. Is he going to step up? Is he going to rise to the occasion? Is he going to fill the shoes of Drew Bobo? He did that in a big way, especially also having to go up against Tim Keenan, their first-round defensive tackle, man. I mean, that's a tall task. Oh, and he stepped up. So.
It is. Yeah. I mean, heck of a job by Malachi Tolliver, this coaching staff, everybody on that offensive line, what they have, you know, done. And we were talking about that. You get about halftime, you're like, dang, we already have 80-something plus yards of rushing.
Yeah.
You know, and it wasn't off because we just had a big, like, 30, 40-yard run. It was – we just – you know, you'd constantly pick up 3 or 4 on first down. It felt like that you were 2nd and 7, and then you get yourself in 3rd and manageable. Then you convert it and get a move the chains and get a 1st down. Just keep moving down the field, and just the way this offense just controlled the ball all night was just a
thing of
good
beauty.
Job by them.
Yeah, I love Nate Frazier too, man. Leading rusher, 13 carries, 52 yards. He averaged 4 yards a carry, and he had the 1 touchdown. I keep saying this, man, but he looks so. Much more confident in the offensive line, and he hits the holes so much quicker than what he used to, man.
Yep.
I think he used to be a little bit more hesitant just because the line, I don't know, just didn't open up holes. And I think a lot of that had to do with last year's offensive line, which is different than this year's. He didn't have that same confidence then, but now he does, and he just shoots out of a cannon through the B gap. He did on that power play, that touchdown there at the goal line. I was so impressed with Nate Frazier. And the fact that he took so many hits out of the backfield, not at the backfield, I should say, out on the edge, the perimeter, you know, as we were throwing to him on a flat or something. So just a tough guy, tough runner. Love his heart. He loves the University of Georgia. I love when a player loves to play at Georgia.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. I mean, and that's, you tell now as a true freshman last year in a sophomore season that the game's just slowed down for him. Mm-hmm. He's comfortable, and he's very confident. And ever since the last game against Alabama where he fumbled in that first quarter, man, he's been a different back. Mm-hmm. He's been a different back. And we talked about that they benched him for a little bit, and since then he's been a high-level SEC caliber running back, man, and I'm excited that he's healthy and he could has time to rest and get even healthier, man, and I'm going to need him.
Yeah. Have we heard anything on Chauncey Bowens? I know he looked banged up a little bit there towards in the fourth quarter.
I think, man, I think I heard Kirby say something about his back, landed wrong on his back, something that he kind of re-aggravated and had done previously as well, but should be ready to go for the playoffs.
Okay, good. I didn't see that, but that's good. We need Chauncey. We need all the guys back and healthy, as many as we can get, because it's going to be a tough 3-game stretch. Let's talk about right quick, too. Man, let's go to Gunner. He went 20 for 26, 156 yards, 3 touchdowns. I thought he played a really clean game. Didn't really force anything. There were no real bad decisions that I saw. I think he played awesome. I mean, just consistent. That's what we need him to keep doing, consistency. And he cleaned up, you know, the mistakes that he made the past few weeks. Didn't allow any this week, so.
Yeah, just had control of the game, man. I think on some of them touchdown drives, especially the first one, had some big throws. Mm-hmm. And he did what he had to do. He's a leader up there. He has command of the offensive huddle. And when you got your defense playing like Georgia's defense is now, what he's doing controlling the offense is perfect. You know, and he's already shown, though, if you're getting in a game with a shootout, he could turn it on at Tennessee and Ole Miss earlier this year that way. But these are the type of games that Kirby Smart loves to win right here. Mm-hmm. And his offense doing what they did to complement how the defense was just shutting down the opposing offense is this is Kirby Smart's style and the way he wants to win football games, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. And Gunner Stockton did exactly what you had to do as a quarterback. In that, when the defense is playing good and the opposing offense isn't able to move the football, really, especially on the ground, is you don't give them freebies, man, to give them momentum by turning the ball over or anything. So, I just thought it was just good complimentary football all the way around.
Mm-hmm. We threw to our tight ends, too. Let me see how many targets. I don't know about targets, but I know we can count the receptions right quick. Let's see. Lawson had 1 reception for 18 yards. Oscar had 2 for 10 yards. All right, so we threw the ball 3 times, or at least completed the ball 3 times to our tight ends. And, you know, I mean, that's a good, what is that, 21 plus 18, 49 yards. Or hold up, math. 39 yards. Excuse me. Sorry.
We're still struggling from yesterday.
I know. Also, it's 11 o'clock.
Exactly.
Sunday night.
So still struggling. Long day, man. Yeah. Long day then getting back, yeah.
I tell you, another guy who had, I thought, a legacy game. Maybe I'm reaching here a little bit. I know a lot of people are going to say, the 23 Tennessee game, and it's hard to argue on that. But Dylan Bell had a game yesterday. 4 carries. Well, he had 4 receptions, 4 carries. He had 4 carries for 24 yards rushing on a couple of end arounds and whatnot. And then four receptions for 45 yards, one touchdown. I thought he had a really good game.
Yeah, absolutely, man. Dylan Bell was, I mean, just how he stepped up in big moments and been a selfless player for this football team. We've said it time and time again. It was a great way to watch him in this SEC championship game, the last one that he'll be playing in, that the performance he had. And I thought the touchdown pass that Gunner threw to him, where great throw by Gunner, great route by Dylan Bell. And Dylan was ready to play, man. He was ready to play today, and just always good just seeing him healthy and a guy like him that you could do just multiple things with in this offense.
Absolutely. Georgia, yeah, finished 141 rushing yards, 156 passing yards, very balanced attack, Adam. And I'm going to continue to brag on Mike Bobo, man. Look at this game. This was a masterclass offensively, I thought. I mean, yeah, was it perfect? No. Did we have a ton of explosives? No, not necessarily. I mean, that's a really good Alabama secondary. They have one of the best passing defenses in the nation. Yeah. Run defense is still a little suspect, at least to me. But we ran so many different things. There's so many looks. I looked, you know, I watched the game back today, the full game, because there's some things you don't remember. So you got to go back and watch the TV copy, right? Yeah. We didn't have the luxury of hitting rewind at the stadium and, you know, looking at some stuff. But I watched today, and good gosh, we throw so much at a defense. Mike Bobo does such a good job of just mixing looks. I mean, when you have the ability to run 13 personnel, just in general,
yeah,
that's pretty good. But but when you got three guys who could go anywhere in the nation, three tight ends that could go anywhere in the nation, and probably start on, I don't know, 95% of the rosters out there, and you got three of those guys on your team, and you put them all out on the field, you're going to give a defense coordinator fits. And that's exactly what Mike Bobo did. I thought we did a really good job. Midline reads, we had some counters, we had some bootlegs.
Absolutely.
We just kept them guessing, man, kept them so off balance. So kudos to Mike Bobo.
Yeah, kudos to Mike Bobo. Also, a fun fact, Clark. So you know how many percentages of the snaps total in the season leading up to the Alabama game that Georgia took under center this year?
Let me take a guess. 20.
13%.
Really?
Okay. Yeah. Guess how many percentage of the snaps that Georgia took under center Saturday night against Alabama?
I don't know if it should be higher or lower. I'm going to say 20.
36% of the snaps Saturday were under center.
Really?
So, yeah, I mean, I don't know. And we noticed last week with breaking in the chemistry with a new center against Georgia Tech, you know, there's some snaps looked a little bit high in the sense that him one might scoot away over Gunnar Stockton's head. But, I mean, they had all week working with that. And, of course, when they were in the gun, there was no issue with that whatsoever against Alabama on Saturday. But breaking in with Tolliver, man, and I don't know why that was, or we just saw that we liked the look against Alabama's defensive line because – how they have been vulnerable against the ground game this year, but we did just have a whole higher percentage of snaps under center. I loved it, man.
Yeah.
I loved it. You don't see that in college football today anymore. I mean, going to what the first touchdown wasn't it was the one where it went from the Iowa Rod at fullback, and then McCray at running back, and everybody in the stadium thought we were going to go up the A gap with McCray, right? And it was play action, and you snuck the fullback, Rod Robinson, right there, out in a typical just classic Mike Bobo touchdown play that you instead of JT Wall or Sean Chappis, it was it was Rod Robinson, man, that you see from 2008 to 2007, right? Brandon Sutherland from 05 or something. So, I mean, yeah, so going back to the well to that when it works is something that's – I loved it. Yeah. I loved it. And so, yeah, I thought that was neat to see and point out something I didn't expect, and I'm sure Alabama did not expect to see.
Yeah, that. Absolutely. That, man, you're exactly right. Mike Bobo – it felt like a very maybe 2011-12 kind of Mike Bobo team offense. Man, running stuff out of the I formation, play action from the I formation, getting a fullback in there. I love that, too, that we use guys like McCray at fullback or Rod Robinson or we really put a lot of dudes there. But it's cool, too, to see it not even just at goal line situations, but in the middle of the field.
Oh, absolutely.
We're running. I mean, and it's not third and one situations, although we do run under center a lot, too, there. But we'll come out first and 10.
Absolutely.
And get under center. And, I mean, you got to really have some faith in your offensive line if you're going to run under center. Because part of the reason you run out of shotgun is so that you can buy yourself a little time and get back quicker and get a little bit more of a view of the field for the quarterback. So, yeah, in case you were wondering.
Yeah, there you go. I love it, man. So, no, great job by that, the play calling. I'm looking forward to now if we're going to start seeing that maybe in the playoffs going forward, is running in the eye and then the halfback toss.
Oh, my gosh. Inject that into my veins. There's nothing better. There's no
better play.
I was
waiting for it Saturday night.
Yeah.
We didn't see it.
No, we didn't.
We didn't see it, but maybe we're going to see it coming soon with Frazier and Chauncey, man. But, no, great day.
I agree. Last thing I want to mention about the offense, if you want to see why this national – gosh, hold up. Let me start that over. If you want to see why this team will win a national championship, I want you to all go to the 14-minute, 28-second mark in the second quarter and just watch that play. No touchdown was scored. It wasn't an explosive play. It wasn't a big, you know, bomb down the field. It was a simple run play. It was a little zone run right up the middle. And I want you to watch how badly Nate Frazier wants to get a first down. I want you to watch Malachi Tolliver, a redshirt freshman, a third string guy. I want you to watch him block his tail off. And I want you to watch our offensive line and our tight ends push that pile for a first down. Look, I know, yes, there are other teams that have done that. I'm not oblivious. This is not the sole reason Georgia's going to win a national championship. But that just goes to show me team plays with so much freaking heart.
That's right. There's some teams that are 1-9 that push the freaking pile.
That's
too. But no,
that's
I thought the exact same thing, man. It just shows the leadership and the team's connected, man. And they never give up the resiliency that we've seen from the beginning of the year. And now you add these guys have grown up, they're mature, they're bought in, and playing at a very high level, I feel like. And it's something that, you know, we talked about it. They're not as talented as the 2021 Georgia Bulldogs, without a doubt. But that same type of leadership, that same type of heart, and what Kirby Smart, the connection and the chemistry that was on that team, Clark, is eerie similar to what's in that locker room now, it feels like, from the outside looking in.
Yeah, I agree. It's going to be fun to see this offense move and get better here in the three games we have left, hopefully. All three we play in.
Absolutely.
I hope we win all three, as I'm sure all of you do as well. But all right, great day from Georgia's offense.
One thing I wanted to point out, you know, Noah Thomas really didn't go. I think he had back spasms then, but should be good to go in New Orleans.
Good. We need him. I tell you what, another guy who's – I don't think he'll be back this year. He might potentially. Ethan Barbour.
Man.
Did you see? He was not even in a boot the other night stretching.
Was
I don't think he fully dressed out, but he was on the field. And, I mean, he looked like he could potentially go later in the season.
It's scary to think some of the guys that may possibly come back, right?
Oh,
I mean,
gosh,
I would be shocked if Barbour comes back. Yeah. I mean, that would be unreal. But maybe Kobe Young? I don't know. I don't know. It's amazing what that Georgia medical staff's able to do and how fast they've gotten guys back in the past and where rehab and it is now, you know. Mm-hmm. But, heck, it's something that I'm excited now to play in this game. But then you get the bye on the December 19th, 20th right there. Rest even more. Get ready to go New Year's night. So,
yep.
I don't know, man. Stars are aligning. And I don't think it's just me with red and black shaded glasses this time.
Yeah. Well, it's funny watching watching ESPN today, you know, the selection show or whatever. They just could not stop talking and raving about this Georgia team, especially this next unit we'll talk about, Georgia's defense.
Sir.
Every one of those pundits was saying, oh, Georgia's defense, man, they look legit. They look like how they should be looking, coached under Kirby Smart. Georgia held Alabama, we all know this, to -3 yards on 16 carries, but I don't know if a lot of people know this part. That is only one of two times in the history of Alabama football that they've rushed for negative yardage. The last time was the 1968 Gator Bowl.
Unbelievable.
We had wide receivers getting down in three-point stance.
Yep.
They became the first team in history not to rush for a first down in an SEC championship game.
Unbelievable.
Alabama, 2025.
Yeah, I love that. I love that, man.
That is crazy.
Yeah. I mean, imagine being in the SEC Championship 2012 when Eddie Lacy was just running it down our throats. But just say, just wait. 13 more years from now, just wait until the game you watch between these two teams.
Yeah.
And how Alabama's rushing attack is in that game, baby. I love that.
Oh, man. Hey, all credit in the world goes to Georgia's defense, man. Look, what killed us in the first meeting back in September is what won us this meeting in the SEC Championship game in Atlanta. Defense. Defense wins championships. It's a saying, and there's a reason why it's a saying.
That defense is what this whole Georgia football dynasty that's been since 2017 when Kirby Smart in his second year started it is what's been the core foundation to the success on the field, right? I mean, yes, you got to have the right pieces. We love the Brock Bowers, Ladd McConkeys, and the Stetson Bennett's and where the offense has been, and they've done their part when defense has struggled by far. But when you think of the championship runs, man, you think of dominant defensive play. Mm-hmm. And where this defense has come from the beginning of the year, having to play young guys and seeing how they've been developed. And if you're a defensive recruit, you're going to get good NIL money at Georgia, but you're wanting to chase even higher. You got to look at where this staff can develop these guys in a hurry that can make you a first-round draft pick. If you got the good Lord, the God-given ability already, and then you come to Athens and get developed by these guys, man, you could be a first-round draft pick. And it's amazing what Glenn Schumann, this staff, is doing. And somebody who deserves his flowers, Glenn Schumann. Mm-hmm. Caught a lot of flack from this whole fan base, man, in September.
Yeah.
And look where we're at now with him. And it's all been just guys, young guys, finally the game slowing down from, and they're just playing just red hot, man. You got leaders out there. It reminded me so much, Clark. Did you see the it was after Alabama scored a touchdown, I believe. CJ Allen was on the sideline, and I think Chris Cole was there. They had DeMelo Jones, who's been playing great football, but just had a lack of judgment in one play right there, got the personal foul, and then had a pass interference call on him. But they were, you know, getting him just fired back up and everything and just telling him this is something that I don't know what – you could just tell it was a nice exchange through that whole defensive unit right there on the sideline. And C.J. Adams was leading the way, looking like what a Roquan Smith would have done.
Yeah.
Looking like what a N'Kobe Dean did. It made me think of, like, the Channing Tindall, N'Kobe Dean exchange in Indianapolis that year, right? So, I mean, when you have that middle linebacker like C.J. Allen, who's just a quarterback of the defense, but a leader out there. And it's just that chemistry's there, man. All the right ingredients of what you saw in 2021 with that defense as far as just the connection and the leadership standpoint on the field is there.
Right. Well, yeah, I mean, you know, it's cheesy, guys. I know it. Everybody says, oh, well, this team's connected. But really, I mean, truthfully, that pays such dividends. You think back to that Peach Bowl for a second. You know, we were down 14 points. Was it the fourth quarter? I think we were down 14 points in the fourth quarter. You know, there's a lot of guys on that team who could have said, oh, well, we just won a national championship game last year. It's been a great ride. That's kind of what we were saying as fans up in the 300 levels. But, you know, they could have kind of, well, dang it. They could have gotten their heads about it. No, they stepped up. And they believed in each other. And because they were so connected, that 22 team especially, we came back and we won that game. And it once again, that seems really cheesy. But that's what you got to have to win championships. I look back to Ohio State last year.
That's the key ingredient.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah, you're exactly
right. I mean,
right.
Talent gets you – talent will take you to a championship. I think connection – wins you championship.
Yeah, that's an ingredient. It's definitely the talent. But the key one that you got to have to do it is the connection in the leadership roles. You're exactly right. Ohio State last year, after they lost to Michigan, man, leaders stepped up in that locker room, and they weren't going to get beat again. Right. They weren't going to get beat again, and they were just super talented, and there you go. Off to the races, man. So, I mean, it's something that you've got to have. It wasn't in Athens last year to the level it's been in years past, but this year is completely different. Completely Agreed. Different. And if you ask Kirby Smart – I would almost guarantee you that, you know, what does he want more when he's looking at a team, you know, going through summer workouts, going into the preseason? It's going to be who's going to be the leaders of this football team.
Right.
Because he knows how pivotal it's going to be to have guys lead the way, you know, monitor the culture in the locker room, develop and build and carry on what the culture has been established at Georgia early on from class to class, man. And you got to have that. And when you have that, special things happen.
I'm going to say something that might be interesting, and we can kind of expand upon this for a little bit. And this, I think, kind of carries into defense. But would you say that Kirby has been more, not sentimental, maybe reflective of this team when he's asked about certain players? You know, he even said the other day, talking about London and maybe Cash and
Cole Spear.
Cole Spear, in the presser after the SEC championship game, you know, I think he said he was – he kind of gets emotional thinking about those guys and what they mean to the University of Georgia, and they love it. And maybe it reminds him of himself when he played, right? He wasn't necessarily the best star athlete on the field, but Kirby Smart loved Georgia, and you can tell that. So I guess my question is, does that seem like it's the case this year?
Yeah.
Just very reflective of this team?
I mean, yeah, I think it speaks to not only just the ability to play football at a high level these guys have, but also just the character,
yeah.
I think, and just the buy-in, man. And the, I think, too, and I could be wrong on this, this is just a wild guess out there, too, these guys like the Dalen Everetts, the seniors he was talking about, talking about Cole Spear, really, mm-hmm. these guys, especially like somebody like Cole Spear, man, who – you know, got hurt, really put him back behind the depth charts right there, but never gave up. But he stayed at Georgia, could have easily transferred out, right? And I think in this day and age where you have recruits who are – there's no loyalty there. The whole Jared Curtis thing saga's just happened, and he's had to deal with that and how frustrating that's got to be to him when you have these guys during this NIL transfer portal age that are staying 3 to 4 years at Georgia, committed to him from the beginning and staying and seeing it through. I think that's added to the emotion and the love for these guys,
yeah.
even more so is how the state of college football is and the culture is when you got guys who buy in and they stay and, you know, there's not that drama with them. They're committed to Georgia. They're going to do what they could do and be selfless as it can be, whatever their part is, whether it's on scout team, special team or whatever it's got to be. They're going to, you know, win football games for you in any way, like Dylan Bell, what he had to do 2 years ago, go in the running back room, right? And then he gets to come back to his natural position, and he's had to play the X receiver some, and just different, just what he's had to go through his past 3 years here, man. And the shine in the SEC championship game like that was something that you just love to see as a Georgia fan.
Agreed. Let's get back to this game. but I agree, that was all good stuff. Adam, I want to talk about defensive line, too. I thought they played their hearts out. And Xavier McLeod, man, he stepped up, caused some havoc. I think he had a few just tackles right at the line of scrimmage, just stoned Alabama's offensive line. What did you think about our defensive line's performance against them?
No, I really am proud of this group. And, you know, a group that everybody's like, man, we don't have the Devontae Whites, Trayvon Walkers anymore, the Jalen Carters, Jordan Davises out there. But this group is solid, man.
Mm-hmm.
And where they're playing at right now and the guys that have stepped up to the younger guys as well. I mean, Elijah Griffin's just a stud and other guys, the Hortons, the Haneys. And I really like what this group is right now. I mean, you look at every level on the defense right now, position group, just guys that are just younger guys that are just playing their hearts out, man, and really, really growing up as well as the veteran leaders out there too. I mean, you couldn't have been more right with that. I mean, I think too, one thing we didn't do against Alabama real well is get pressure up the middle.
Mm-hmm.
I felt like we did Saturday night as well. And I think I love this defensive line as well. Trey Scott, another just unbelievable job. I mean, you know, but just to go through another coach cycle right now, knock on wood, and to keep this defensive staff together too, mm-hmm. has been a big blessing nobody's talking about.
Agreed. Yeah, we had 3 sacks, 4 tackles for loss, 6 pass deflections. I think one of those was at the line of scrimmage. We batted down a pass from Ty Simpson on a 3rd down maybe. It was a pretty big 3rd down from what I remember. And then we had the 1 interception, Dalen Everett taking that ball back, getting some – I'm going to call it yak, though that's technically not – I mean, I guess, yards after catch, right?
Yeah.
Technically, I mean
– Yeah, for interception.
We talk about receivers when we talk about yak. But in this case, Dalen got us in good field position. So that was good. I mean
– What, 3rd interception had 2 SEC championship games.
I know, death, taxes, and Dalen Everett
picking off in the SEC championship. Yeah. So
wild stuff.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of – God, the secondary, too. I mean, Ellis Robinson is becoming a very dangerous cornerback in coverage. What, I think he got 3 targets at him and 0 catches allowed.
And I'm going to tell you something. Yeah, you're right. There was one play specifically. I think it was 1st quarter, maybe the 2nd drive of the game. Ellis came flying downfield. It was maybe a little swing pass out to the right. And it was, you know, it was Ellis versus the receiver. And he came up. It was not a – no hesitation. He just shot out of a cannon, came down the hill, and made a great open field tackle. I think it was a tackle for loss as well. So, yeah, man, you're right. Ellis, he's great. He's been doing great in pass coverage, which I think is something that he struggled in or with earlier in the year.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the Alabama game, there was one of Alabama's early touchdowns in September was kind of a head-scratcher, but Ellis was in coverage. And I think it was from that moment on, you've seen him grown into the five-star stud recruit at cornerback that he is, right?
Yeah.
And him and DeMello Jones have locked down those spots beside Dalen Everett. And that secondary, I mean, you got to tip your hat to Dante Williams, man, a guy who's gotten a lot of heat. His unit's playing very good right now, in my opinion. And Tavares Robinson, too, the safety. So another guy, man, is a young guy out there, Rashawn Dinkins.
Yeah.
Who looked very good at the star. Looked very good at the star. I mean, Aguaro was, I think, had a club. He was banged up and didn't go. But, man, the future is very bright with that kid at the star.
I agree. Former four-star. He's a freshman out of Warner Robins. He played lights out for, you know, going up against some of these dudes and, you know, helped in run support. I thought he did a good job of kind of setting the edge on some plays, you know, and just a good team player. I like Rashawn Dinkins. And did you see him throw Ryan Williams on the sideline?
Yeah, I did.
It was great.
I did, man. Oh, I did. Man. Yeah, I mean, like we talked about, every unit. I mean, just, of course, the middle linebackers, the Raylan Wilsons, CJ Allens. I mean, what they are, they are that third-year leap that we've seen, all these Kirby Smart linebackers have, Glenn Schumann linebackers have throughout the tenure here, and being the leaders that they are, but not only being the leaders, they go out and they just make plays, man. And we've seen them just absolutely just be the heart of the defense from the leadership standpoint, the veterans out there, Justin Williams and Chris Cole, when they come in playing at a good level. And then Gabe Harris has came alive, Clark.
Mm-hmm.
Gabe Harris has came alive, and Quintavious Johnson off the edge, Zayden Walker.
Yeah.
Another young guy the past couple games have come in. He looks shifty. He's quick getting to the backfield as well. Mm-hmm. And
Ja'Cory Thomas.
No,
he's a secondary guy, but still.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not going to lie. I haven't been too high on him at times, but I thought he had a great game Saturday too.
Yeah.
So, I mean, everybody did on the defense side of the football.
I
know. Man.
And one thing, too, I think Kirk may have mentioned this in the broadcast today, but I kind of noticed this. I mean, we ran a too high safety look the whole game. And when you do that – you're not going to get much past those guys, right? No. KJ, Ja'Cory, whoever's back there in the secondary. And what that allows you to do is just keep everything in front of you. And you can do that when you're actually getting a pass rush and you don't have to walk a safety down and help and run support, or maybe take a safety and feel like you got to blitz him just to get something towards Ty Simpson. No, we were able to do it with four guys, sometimes three, create pressure, and then, you know, we sometimes send a linebacker. But I thought Glenn Schumann gave Ty Simpson a lot to look at, and, you know, a lot to analyze, a lot to process. I don't think it was Ty Simpson's best game. I'm sure he would agree with you on that. He went 19 for 39, 212 yards. Respectable, not bad. But, man, when you're getting Alabama to throw the football 39 times,
yeah,
that says something. Because they're not an aired out kind of a team. I mean, yes, maybe under DeBoer you could argue that, but traditionally speaking, Alabama's a ground and pound football team. They always have been.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
This is so weird for them. It feels weird for me as a Georgia fan watching them not being able to run the ball. That was the story of the game. Negative three rushing yards, and a lot of that has to do with how we played up front. So
you're right, man. Them not getting explosive plays downfield like they really were good at, and you know, the first part of the season.
Mm-hmm.
And one thing too, like you said, you eliminate the run game, negative three rush yards. You're like, hey, Ty Simpson, you're going to beat us. You're going to have to beat us through the air.
Mm-hmm.
And not only that, Clark, when you talked about the two high safeties up, nothing getting behind them, but when he was getting those intermediate passes, man, that the open field tackling.
Yeah,
by our DBs and then linebackers getting to the outside on, because they killed us in the flats last year. And I know there's a couple plays. I think that the one touchdown was some poor tackling there. But overall, for the whole day, I thought we have done an extremely good job, fundamentally speaking. You know, right when you not having any yards after catch.
That you're exactly right. The getting there as soon as they catch the ball, meeting them and tackling, that's huge. But also just the fact that we had guys in phase with these receivers.
Yes,
Ryan, there was one time Ryan Williams took off. I only saw one time where I was like, oh my gosh, had he thrown that, that's a wide open touchdown.
Yeah.
He beat, I think it was, it might have been Ellis inside. He beat Ellis inside. Ryan Williams made a great move. But we got pressure on Ty Simpson.
Right.
And I promise, because we got pressure, he couldn't have made that throw anyway. But That's the difference in the game. We got some pressure up front. And also, too, we got off the field on third downs.
Oh, yeah.
Three Huge. For 14. Huge. They only converted 3 of 14 on third downs.
Couldn't have been
awesome.
More opposite. Right. In the first meeting, right? Yeah. I mean, and that's what happens. I mean, everybody and their brother knew that's the key stuff that you got to change. It can't have happened. This defense wasn't going to allow that to happen this go around. And also, I thought, too, what it looked like we were doing more so, and this could be wrong, it's just an opinion I thought, of, we were getting our hands in the air more as a defensive line and got some batted down balls, too. Yep. But not only that, you get a batted down ball or two, and you get in his mind that you got to elevate the ball a little bit more over the line, and that also leads to, like, that fourth and two play right there when they were deep inside their own territory when he just sailed it out of bounds there.
Yeah.
I mean, he was rattled. Great job by this defense and this defensive staff of, you know, not really letting him get in sync at all.
Right.
You know, and when he did, when he was hitting just check down routes and everything, instead of them getting yards after catch, it set up, what, 3rd and 6, 2nd and 6, instead of 4-yard completions instead of 12, 15-yard passes.
It was great. God, it's a thing of beauty. All right, last thing we'll end with Georgia's defense. I mean, they played lights out, and this proves it right here. Listen to this. This is Alabama. These are Alabama's drives right here throughout the entirety of the game. They went punt, punt, interception, punt, punt, end of half, punt, 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 touchdown, turnover on downs, turnover on downs.
Oh, man. God,
is that not crazy?
That fires me up right there. I mean, I'm wore out just from the weekend and everything and everything else going on. But reading that right there, knowing Georgia just did that to Alabama. And then too, man, I'm so proud of Glenn Schumann and this defensive staff, too, with how the first two games against Grubb and then was this year's Sheridan last year, but DeBoer's offense the past 2 years have gone and to answer like that.
Mm-hmm.
Just think of beauty, man. And also, I mean, the TD, too. I mean, we talked about the two penalties that we had, the personal foul right after the sack that would have been probably would have stopped him right there. But also, too, Ty Simpson, I think his arm got hit. It wasn't the ball wasn't batted down. And then just, of course, it just lands into a tight end's hands. And I think they picked up a first down on that play, right? Or a lot of positive yards on that. So, I mean, some fluke stuff happened for them to get their touchdown, too, Clark.
Agreed, yeah. I mean, you need to go back and watch that. Watch Ja'Cory Thomas. He is ticked.
Yes.
That just magically landed. And you, hey, we blitzed Dalen Everett off the edge. I don't know if somebody saw that or anybody saw that, but that's who got a hand on it.
Yeah.
Dalen Everett, man, I love some.
It very well could have fell into linebacker DB's hands and gone the other way for 6. But that's the kind of stuff you got to do. And just unfortunately, it fell. I mean, that guy was right there at the right time, and he got it. But, I mean, that's the stuff that had to happen, that and a couple penalties for them to cross the goal line Saturday night.
God, I love it, man. Defense is looking real, real good. This whole team, man, we are peaking at the right time. It's all three phases. The last phase we'll talk about here. Georgia's special teams, too. I mean, you could argue that this changed the game. I think this set the tone for the entire game right here. This one play of the game, in my opinion. Cole Spear blocking that punt. Adam, you know, I was sitting up in the upper deck with you.
Yep.
What? We need to do that more often.
Absolutely.
At SEC championship games. I mean, we normally sit, you know, regular season, whatever, but SEC championship. Anyway, I don't know if you heard me. I definitely turned to Caitlin. I said, we blocked it. Like maybe a second before we actually blocked it, and it's just wild.
I was trying
to get a reaction from her because I think she was looking down and maybe at her phone or something or looking away. And I was like, "Oh, we blocked it!" And then literally a second later,
it actually happened.
Oh my gosh, it's crazy!
But anyway. I didn't hear that exchange. That's great.
But
that was awesome, man.
Good on Cole Spear. Just a hustle play. Totally set the tone for the rest of the game.
Sets the tone. You go in there, you drive, you score, get a touchdown right there, then you know you're off to the races, right? Mm-hmm. So, I mean, this special teams has been phenomenal. Like you said, Clark, you got to have that, and you got to have big plays in special teams, whether it's pivotal field goals. I mean, you just ask Ohio State about that. A kicker that can hit you a gimme field goal. You got to have a punter who can flip field position, man. And then you got to have guys who are capable of making onside kick recoveries and blocks on special teams, punts like that. So, also, 2002, 2005, 2025, block punts, the SEC championship for Georgia. Ja'Cory Bryant did it in 2002, Georgia's first appearance there. 2005, when they beat LSU, was Brian McClendon. And then, again, it was done Saturday night against Alabama. That's so, awesome. Just a little fun fact right there.
Yeah. That's awesome. Once again, Kirby, 18-0 at his time in Georgia when somebody blocks kick or a punt.
Love it.
That's got to say, I mean, that's a really cool statistic. Like, who comes up with that? Who keeps track of that?
I don't know. I was like, man, have we had that many blocked kicks?
Yeah, I think we have. I mean, Rose Bowl.
Of course we have.
We had one against Marshall
Auburn,
this year.
Rose Bowl. No. Arkansas in 21.
Yeah. Oh, that was good. That was a real good one.
Yeah, that was a great one.
I'm sure we could go on. But yeah, we blocked a kick against Auburn in 17
SEC championship. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
That is right. LSU and 22.
Exactly right. Yeah. Chris Smith took it back all the way.
Man, they probably – we need to go back and – you know what we need to do?
Well, there's a block kick in the SEC championship. It wasn't a punt, but yeah, there's right. kicks. Absolutely. Need to just do a real
– a compilation.
Back. Yeah, a compilation. Ooh. Oh, people love that. Do that.
Yeah.
I don't know what
– that's going to take forever to do.
Yeah, do that, Clark. Why
yeah,
not?
Yeah. I might do it. If the people want it – if y'all want a blocked kick – compilation video, and I'll post it to YouTube or not YouTube. I'll post it to Instagram or something. That would be cool though.
Yeah, I'm sure. Other big games.
Surely that I'm guessing there was one in 16. Oh man, we're gonna sit here forever and do
this. Yeah, we got to move on.
We'll do this after the
absolutely.
Maybe that's a patron segment right
there.
There
we go.
A video. Love we just sit here and think about all the games and we write them down.
Absolutely.
I don't know. Anyway.
I love it.
Hey, another unit that looked really good. Kickoff team, man, looked fantastic. I know a lot of times we boot the ball in the back of the end zone, which I'm always an advocate for, man.
Yeah, me too.
Don't give them a chance.
Yeah, don't even give them a chance.
But it is good when you can kind of read a kickoff return team and see, hey, we got a chance here to pin them deep. And we were able to do that, I think, a couple times. But I just love kickoff team. I was on kickoff team. Were you on kickoff team back in the day?
I was.
High
I
school?
Was on, yes. You got to stay disciplined. Stay in your lane.
You got to stay in your lane.
Or you'll get off the kickoff team fast.
Yes. but, man, they get down the field so quickly. And when they did return the ball last Saturday night, Alabama, we got there. We met them. We got them to the ground. And that's really important. And, you know, absolutely. That buys you some yards. Defensively. So, anyway, another guy I got to shout out, Brett Thorson. Big, big boots. He had 5 of his 7 punts were down in the 20, man.
Huge. Huge. Yeah. I mean, and when you got a punter that does that, and then you got a defense playing like they're playing.
And you got an offense playing like they're playing.
There you go.
It's a recipe for success right there.
It's perfect.
Mm.
And then Peyton Woodard didn't even get a chance to attempt a field goal.
Yeah.
But, I mean, the way he's been kicking the ball, man, it would have got in there and just knocked it right down.
I'm sure.
Upright. So,
is everything happening a little too good? Are you worried that, like, it's going to kind of wear out?
The only thing that makes me nervous about it is I love the fact you got to get healthy. Right. Yeah. I mean, this team's banged up. Not only the guys that we have that are missing time out there because they're injured, but also guys that are just fighting through it. Right. I mean,
right.
And everybody is. Everybody is across college football. But, man, we've been just so hot the past couple weeks that you hate stopping right now, right?
I know.
You hate having that lull, but heck, I mean, they're still going to be practicing, man. They've got that confidence, they've got that buy-in right now. That I don't think they're losing focus by any means with the leadership on this team.
Absolutely.
I would be nervous if you didn't have the leadership and the foundation that you do have in Athens, man. It's going to be a completely different football team that goes into the stadium in New Orleans on New Year's Day this year than it was on January 2nd last year.
Absolutely.
I mean, the whole locker room. I mean, you think about last year with the whole Carson Beck injury. I hated that, but him just kind of going missing from Buttsmere. You're having to break in a brand-new quarterback. And, I mean, it's something we'll talk about with the Sugar Bowl preview, but, I mean, everything that could go wrong did go wrong outside of the game, and the X's and O's preparing into the game, right? And this year, I mean, that stuff just can't happen again. I mean, it's just not high likelihood of, unfortunately, the adversity that was faced there and the unfortunate circumstances developing again. And good Lord willing, it doesn't happen. But it's something that I do feel like this team's just going to be a whole lot more confident and a whole just much bigger buy-in.
Agreed.
Because, I mean, it's honestly amazing that 2024 team won a SEC championship.
It is.
Looking back on it.
One of Kirby's best coaching jobs, honestly.
Unbelievable.
Yeah. Well, Kirby said something interesting in the post-game ceremony, Adam. He said, these fans have been through a lot of heartbreak and agony. And I just kind of found that a little comical. Yes, Georgia fans have experienced some letdowns against Alabama. But, guys, we have seen eight SEC championship games. We've won under Kirby, four?
Yeah, four,
We have two national championships in the past 5 years. I almost screamed at Kirby, what are you talking about?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, once again, there's been some...
In that building.
In the building, Alabama, I guess a history.
But no, you're right. You're 100% right.
But Kirby, man, give yourself some credit.
We're spoiled.
We are so spoiled.
We're spoiled. Yeah. We're spoiled. You're a spoiled fan base when you just know that first Saturday in December... You're going to go to the SEC championship.
Even when there's not divisions.
Right.
And there's another two teams extra in the conference.
There's teams that went 11-0, lose on rivalry week, and they're not even making it in.
Yeah.
It's unreal, man. It's going to be very interesting to see. Now next year will be a 9-game SEC slate. There really is talk that this game could be eliminated.
Yeah.
And if it is, Clark, the lasting memories of the past few SEC championship games we've had, man, something we'll take to the grave with us.
Mm-hmm.
22 was special. The way she went in a 50-30 game against LSU like that. Overtime win against Texas. And then just the one, just the bow on top of it all was beating Alabama, destroying Alabama 28-7.
Mm-hmm.
And something, we say it all the time. People are tired of hearing me say it on this podcast. But you can't take it for granted with how blessed and spoiled we are. I mean, four SEC championships since 2017. To put that in perspective, Georgia went 20 years from 1982 to 2002 until Rick beat Arkansas in 2002 without winning any.
Yeah.
And then Rick got two, 02 and 05, and you went from 05 to 17, 12 years without winning one.
Yeah.
So now this is what, 07 to 08, that's 8 years,
mm-hmm.
9 years, I guess. There have been 9 games that you've won 4 out of them.
Wild. It's crazy, man. Can't make it up.
And for fans that it doesn't matter to, I don't know what to say to that because obviously if it doesn't, you weren't a fan and didn't, following it in the early 2000s, mid 2000s and realized just how rare they are to get and how mm-hmm. special it is to see Georgia at the mountaintop of the Southeastern Conference.
Yeah.
Especially back-to-back in this 16-league team, man. And it frustrated Greg Sankey so much to have to give that trophy to them.
It did. He hates Kirby.
Oh, I mean,
But here the funny thing is, the ironic thing is, Kirby – makes him so much money.
Yeah.
So much money.
I don't know what, I guess from the fans, it definitely looks like that after the comments last year on the podium after Georgia beat Texas. But then this year, he just goes up there and he gives him the trophy, takes his one picture, looks at his assistant or whoever the other suit was up there, and says, we're gone. So, I don't know if that was a coincidence or not. It definitely looked like he didn't enjoy giving that trophy to the University of Georgia.
Yeah. Alabama fans, they keep saying, this SEC championship game didn't matter. Just toss it on out the window. I think they're just mad that since that night in Indianapolis in 2022, they've only won one SEC title and zero national championships. Georgia in that time frame has won two national championships and three SEC championships. I think they're slipping into irrelevancy, and they know it. They're starting to realize it.
Yeah, there's a changing of the guard in the Southeastern Conference, Clark. I don't care that Kirby Smart's just 1-2 against Kalen DeBoer, the one that it mattered against him in the SEC Championship. He got that one. Kirby Smart owns the Southeastern Conference now. And as a Georgia Bulldog man, we just couldn't be more blessed. We're a spoiled fan base, and I'm so thankful for Kirby Smart, Glenn Schumann, Mike Bobo, and this whole Georgia coaching staff and where we're at. What a year this year. I don't care what happens the rest of the way. Of course, you want a national championship, but this team is young. This team is young. Going back from August, Clark, in August, people were saying 8-4, especially after the first Alabama game. They were saying 8-4, 9-3, Bobo with this offense. Glenn Schumann just doesn't have it without Will Muschamp there to hold his hand. All this stuff was being said that the media narrative that Georgia was done. Georgia was done, but what do? They go back-to-back SEC championships, 11-1 season that nobody predicted after September ended and going into October, and now they have a young football team, a hungry football team, a team that is very well led with a lot of veteran guys in leadership positions and a lot of young, talented guys that the light has came on with them. And watch out, there's nobody in America, Clark, who wants to play this Georgia football team because they're the most physical team in the United States of America because of what Kirby Smart and the culture and the foundation that's in Athens, Georgia. And that's your favorite team if you're listening to this podcast, more than likely. And it doesn't get any better than this. Doesn't get any better than this as a guy from rural Georgia who grew up loving the Georgia Bulldogs. Yep. See yet again another December come where we get to enjoy Christmas with our families, Clark, and then watch another Georgia potential national championship run. That just gets juice, man.
Oh, yeah. That should have just been the ending of the show right there. You're going to have to summon that energy.
Yeah, that's right. We're going to do it.
That's yeah, just a little bit.
I'm dog dead tired doing this, man. That just hit a big just energy burst right
good.
There. Just thinking about it.
Good.
I mean, that's a Georgia fan. How can you not just think about where we're at, man? What we've got to see? Because you just think it's got to end someday, right? I mean, and it will. And it will. But I think it's going to be anytime soon.
Right.
It's not going to be anytime soon, look, man.
As long as Kirby Smart is at the helm.
You almost feel guilty how blessed we are.
I know. Fans. Yeah.
I mean, just think of like pitiful Tennessee fans out there.
Whoa. I'm not feeling bad for any Tennessee fan.
I agree.
Auburn, Florida fans. I guess I could see that they might feel pain and pity, but I don't feel bad
like
for
Tennessee
them.
Tennessee fans, they hadn't even got to go see Tennessee just play in Atlanta since 2007, much less win the conference championship. Right. I don't think they've won an SEC championship this
millennium.
This century. Yeah.
No, they haven't. This millennium, they have not won.
Was the last one.
Yep.
I mean, and you just think, I mean, the list goes on and on of our rivals, man. The dominance that Georgia has over them. And, I mean, we're a blessed fan base. There should never be anybody complaining right now as a Georgia fan.
Yeah.
I don't know if they win the national championship. I think we're in a good spot. But even if we don't, this season has been a massive success, Clark.
I agree. Good stuff, Adam.
Mm.
Let's move on to last week's games. Talk about the conference championship games. I want to give people an update on the standings.
Here we go, baby.
Adam, you've got a commanding three-game lead right now.
It's over, isn't it?
No.
We're going to do bowl mania. Why not? All right, I love that. That'd be good.
It'll keep the bowl games interesting for us.
Love it.
Right now, Adam is 56-25, and I am 53-28. So I got a little catching up to do. It didn't happen this past week. I, in fact, dropped another game to your lead. So, anyway, let's start with the CUSA, the Conference USA CUSA. Championship.
Yes.
We had Kennesaw State and Jacksonville State. Kennesaw State 19, Jacksonville State 15. So, great job.
But the Owls, man.
Yeah.
Kennesaw State Owls, what, their second year in FBS? Won a CUSA championship.
Good.
Look at the Owls. Watch out for the Owls, man.
Yeah.
Another Georgia university institution beating Alabama College.
Right.
On conference championship weekend. Good on the Owls. Hoot, hoot.
I love it. Hoot. next up was the American Athletic Championship. We had North Texas and Tulane. Tulane wins 34-21. John Summerall.
Yeah, we got to start instilling our hate for John Summerall.
Yeah.
Finding stuff that we don't like about that guy because he is going to Gainesville, Florida to be the coach. Potentially could be playing against Georgia and New Orleans.
Very true. Does it not seem like to you that he, maybe I should say this on the podcast.
I think
he snorts a certain substance.
Like Brent Venables.
Yeah. It's kind of crazy. That's what you want in a defense.
That's exactly
head coach.
Right.
I'm not denying that.
Absolutely.
But man, he's got a screw loose somewhere.
Yeah.
Of course, and people out there. People out there probably say the same about us.
Absolutely. Different. Yeah, I mean, no. I in all honesty, man, I kind of think I'm more nervous about him at Florida. I mean, not to overtake Georgia by any means, but I'm more impressed, I guess, by the hire of him than any of the past ones that they've had since
Urban Meyer. I thought you were about to say then goalish or something. Like, I thought you were about to compare him to the hires that have happened this season.
Well, man,
are you more impressed
with
him than Alex Goldsh at Auburn?
Yeah.
Really?
I am. What's Golish doing?
I don't know. I mean, USF's looked pretty daggum good. He's flipped that program on its head.
Well, Tulane won the conference this year.
That's fair.
I mean, yeah, and I will say, though, Golish had a longer road to get USF to where they were. They were in more turmoil than Tulane. I think Willie Fritz had Tulane in a better spot.
Yeah.
They played in New Year's Six Bowl a few years back under Willie Fritz, and then he left to go to Houston. So, but Summerall, though, man, he's been a head coach 4 years, and I think he has won the conference championship all 4 years, two at Troy and two at Tulane.
Wow.
Is that right? Or at least been in the conference championship game.
Right.
So, I like him. I mean, when's the last time Florida's hired a defensive-minded coach, Muschamp?
Yeah.
And, Buster Faulkner hired as OC. Of course, I'm not by any means intimidated by them and that staff, but I will say I think it's more impressive than the combinations they've had for the past decade or so.
Which is not saying a whole lot.
Just looking at it right now as a start. We'll see, though. Hopefully they fold, though, and they're awful. But I do respect Summerall.
Yeah. We were going to get the winner of Tulane and Ole Miss, which is Sugar Bowl,
which is crazy when we talk about this. I mean, yeah. We're having a rematch in the same venue of two teams that just met a couple months ago, where the score of the game was a 5-touchdown differential.
Oh yeah, Tulane and Ole Miss played.
Oh yeah,
I totally forgot.
Tulane's
about that.
Already lost to him by 35 points.
Jeez, Louise, man!
I already played him in Oxford.
I totally forgot about that.
Yep.
God, that stinks. That's a boring matchup in my mind. I don't know. Maybe some magic.
I don't know. Yeah. Who knows? We'll see.
All right. We got the Mountain West Championship, UNLV versus Boise State. Dan Mullen could not get it done on the blue turf. Boise State wins 38-21. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know.
I didn't watch this game. Well, I guess we did kind of watch the game during the college show, but
it's crazy, man. Boise State, 4-loss Mountain West Championship team. Crazy how we've had two group of five champion slots open for the playoffs this year, and Boise State not even being the conversation for one of them.
It's wild.
You know, historically, the BCS, even going back to the BCS games, they snuck in, and they snuck in the playoffs last year as a group of five at large, man, champion. So, down year for them in the sense of four losses, but they still won a Mountain West Conference championship.
Yeah, which is a really big deal.
Yeah.
If you didn't know.
Yeah, just kidding. Huge.
Next up, we had the Big 12 championship. We had BYU and Texas Tech. Texas Tech, man, put it on them, 34-7. Yeah. Texas Tech looks pretty daggum good.
Oh, they're scary, Clark. Yeah. I'll tell you this right now. That side of the bracket, better watch out for the Red Raiders.
Kind of glad we're not on that side of the bracket.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, them and Oregon is probably going to be on a collision course, and that one will be interesting. I don't think a lot of people are picking Oregon. They may win that game, but
Look out. A little upset. Actually, it wouldn't be an upset.
No, it wouldn't be an upset, but still a lot of people are picking Oregon, I feel like, to win that one. But Texas Tech, just watch out.
Yeah, pretty good team. All right, we had the Big Ten Championship. This lived up to all the high expectations, I think. Indiana versus Ohio State. Indiana won 13-10. What a great game that was, truly.
Yeah, I mean, unreal. That Indiana won that game, in my opinion. I mean, a lot of the models and everything said that it would be a close, you know, 4-point swing spread right there. But good on Kirk Cignetti, man. I mean, you have, whatever you think about the guy and how he carries himself, you got to respect the most impressive turnaround of a collegiate football program in history as the past 2 years at Indiana Hoosiers. I mean, not only is it not like this is a Cinderella run this year, he made the playoffs last year.
Right.
Only lost one regular season game, right? But this year he goes undefeated and wins the Big Ten.
Yeah. And beats a very good Ohio State football team.
And has done it on both sides of the football as well. It's a complete team, man. And not with a bunch of high-level recruits either. It's not like they just had some rich booster give them $400 million. They went out and just bought all these five-star guys that pulled them away from Alabama, Georgia, Oregon, Ohio State's roster. No.
Yeah.
These guys are Sunbelt-type athletes, man, with a few more sprinkled in, and they're just winning. It's crazy.
This is Kurt Cignetti is Dabo Sweeney's spirit animal. Like,
oh, yeah.
That's who Dabo Sweeney aspires to be.
Right.
It's right. Kurt Cignetti. I mean, honestly, to build a program like that, look, hats off to him. It really is. Honestly, it's impressive. I don't even hate Indiana. Not right now. I mean, if we meet up with them and they beat us in the national championship, I'm going to be ticked. But man, like, look, Kurt Cignetti, he's talked a lot of crap. Google me. I thought that was very pretentious, egotistical of him. But, man, he's backed it up.
He was on Alabama staff at one time, too.
That's true.
Another guy who was on there in the sense. But, no, I didn't know who he was. I knew he coached James Madison there. But it's wild to me how he's just kind of came out of nowhere. It's not like this young, just rising coach who, was a hot defense coordinator name, and, you know, he's in his mid-40s, early 50s or something, that's all of a sudden just, bam, come on the scene, led Indiana. He's an older guy who's been around, and all of a sudden just, boom. And good on him, too, going to Indiana, going to Bloomington. You know, they're going to build a statue of him now, even just after the first 2 years.
Yeah.
But not going to, like, Penn State or anything. Just, I'll sign an extension for X amount of millions a year and just ride the success here and just hang it up whenever I want to and make my money here. So, I mean, good on him for that, in his career doing that.
I don't blame him.
Why would you leave?
I mean, you're going down as the best head coach of all time, and you haven't even won you won one conference championship. And that's the first one, is it not, outright?
Since, 1967. I think they split 1-45, 1-1 outright in 67.
Okay, so, jeez, I mean, that's crazy. And then, it's a head scratcher. And this is not basketball, folks.
Well, exactly. The next conference championship game, you list off too. I mean, that's what's so crazy about it, man.
All right, let's talk about the all crap conference, the ACC championship.
All crap conference.
Yeah. It's a crappy conference, man.
Oh,
no offense.
Man.
Hey, wait. No offense to Will Harrell.
Yeah.
No offense. But man, what a game this was. Duke 27, Virginia 20. We were pulling for the Cavaliers.
Yes, sir.
We were pulling for them only because of Will Harrell. Shout out to Will Harrell and the whole Harrell family.
That's right.
Good to see them this past Saturday as well.
Absolutely.
Emma Grace and Mr. Harrell. But anyway, yeah, Duke won. Took them to overtime. I mean, this was crazy. Virginia took Duke to overtime. Duke controlled this game for quite a while.
Yeah, I honestly kind of thought with the momentum that Virginia got there coming down the field that they would have just gone for two there at the end, maybe.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, I don't know. I guess it was a wild game. It was fun to watch nightcap right after the Big Ten championship. You got to tune in just in time to watch Virginia go down the field, tied up, end regulation, and go into overtime. Duke, Manny Diaz, what a call from getting the ball first in overtime and going for it on the 3-yard line, fourth and goal, instead of kicking the field goal.
Wait, what?
You didn't see that?
Oh, wait, no, that's when hold up. I saw it, but my TV buffered majorly.
Oh, did it?
So I had to exit the ESPN app, go back in, and then all of a sudden they were in the
end zone. Duke gets the ball first.
Uh-huh.
It's fourth and three on the goal line. Instead of kicking the field goal and then letting Virginia have the chance to get tied up, force another overtime or win with a touchdown, Manny Diaz says, nah, we're just going to go ahead and try to get seven right here, nothing. He gets seven, and then, of course, Tony Elliott comes out there, dials up a trick play, the first play of the next overtime series, and pick, done, wow. Ball game. Duke Blue Devils, 8-5 ACC champions.
That's just crazy, man. You can't even make it up.
First ACC championship since Steve Spurrier was on the sideline in Durham, North Carolina, in what, 1989, I believe, right before he went to Florida. So I don't know. It's wild how in the world a 5-loss Duke Blue Devil team won the ACC championship.
Yeah.
And how that caused just pandemonium in the college football playoffs, that you had Miami sneak in, who didn't qualify for the ACC championship.
Crazy.
Ultimately,
man,
that's what leaves Notre Dame out of it. It's because Duke won, and you have James Madison Tulane. It's wild. It's one of the most chaotic playoff scenario we've seen. It's amazing. I think you can attribute NIL and the transfer portal to just the madness that you see across college football. And some people might think it's a blessing, you know, in the sense of you got more fan bases that got hope. If they have an alumni or a booster that has the money, you could do what Indiana does. And right now, Indiana has made schools more impatient with coaching hires because look what they're doing there. They literally did it in 1 year.
Right.
Literally did it in 1 year. And really, it's not like they were a big NIL player and just had all the money. It's amazing. So, I was thinking today when I was watching that reveal show, Clark, you have Indiana's the number one overall seed.
Yeah.
And then Texas Tech is in the top four.
I know.
Getting a bye.
What world are we living in?
Duke blew up everything, winning the ACC.
Yeah.
Man, that looks like something that happens when you're in college football 26 and you're in the year 2044 on your dynasty.
And you're just randomizing everything.
You're just simming. Leveled out there, right? I mean, it's not that it's Ohio State or Alabama or Oregon or Georgia winning every year. You know, it's crazy that college football's got this. I love it. I love it in the sense that these new teams that are on the block, right? Mm-hmm. And I love it, and I'm excited because I've been fortunate enough as a fan and an alumnus of Georgia to see Georgia win a national championship, play in multiple national championships, win multiple national championships, win multiple conference championships. So people who are diehards of their football teams that are not our rivals, like Indiana, who never would have thought that they would get to witness a Big Ten championship over Ohio State, good on them, man. That's a special feeling. I'm glad they've got to experience this, but hopefully that's the last thing they get to experience. Maybe they'll beat Alabama if Bama beats Oklahoma, but hopefully they don't get to experience a national championship win.
That'll be
Georgia, but wild, man. Wild.
Oh, yeah.
Wild.
We are going to dedicate the next episode to previewing just the college football playoff, all the madness. I know this will kind of be a little old news when we release that episode, but we'll do more previewing than reacting, I guess.
Yeah.
So be on the lookout for that here soon.
One thing I do got to – did you see where Notre Dame opted out?
Yeah, what the heck?
They opted out to play in the Pop-Tart Bowl too, Clark.
I know, which gave Georgia Tech a shoe in for the Pop-Tart
Bowl. Yeah, but who wanted to opt out of the Pop-Tart Bowl? I mean, don't you love Are you a big advocate of the celebration of the Pop-Tart Bowl?
Okay. At the end, before we get to that, let me ask you: do you even like Pop-Tarts?
Yeah, I like a Pop-Tart.
Okay, what's your favorite Pop-Tart?
Strawberry.
So, do you like it frosted or unfrosted?
Frosted.
Yeah,
100%, man. How about you?
Unfrosted is communistic.
Yeah, I agree.
William Hearn's dad. Shout out to William. He always ate unfrosted strawberry Pop-Tarts. I was just like, this is the weirdest thing. I didn't even know they existed until I opened up their pantry when I used to spend the night with William. Anyway, I love cookies and cream.
Yeah, that's good too.
You remember how they used to make them in like, you could break them apart into, it was in thirds.
Yeah.
Pop-Tart was in thirds. You could dunk them in milk. God, I don't know. Another flavor I love, right quick, sorry. We'll move on from this. Talk about the Pop-Tart. I do love some, what is it, cookie dough? Yeah, cookie dough is really good.
Yep.
Sorry. Anyway, let's return back to the Pop-Tart.
No, I mean, I love these type of bowl games like this. The Cheez-It Bowl is another one when you get to watch and in the end zone when they're kicking the PAT that there's just the cheese that's out there in the stands that's got multiple, like the cheese that has the hair, the cheese has got hats, you know.
The mascot?
No, like just cardboard cutouts of the cheese. It's like on the Cheez-It commercials.
I don't think I've ever seen that.
Oh, yeah. You know, like I woke up feeling the cheese was coaching the cheese. Like
right.
The round, what do you call them?
The cheese wheel?
The cheese wheel. There we go.
Yeah.
I couldn't think of the word wheel. The cheese wheel that are the cardboard cutouts of the cheese wheel that are sitting in the stands, but they're all personalized.
Like are you serious?
Yes, they're like wearing hats. There's girls that's got long hair. So you see the kickers kicking it all spread out because nobody sat this game. So there's empty seats. So they fill them up with cardboard cutouts of cheese.
I don't think I've Googled that.
I believe it for years. I still think they do it. But the Pop-Tart Bowl said, we're going to ramp it up a little bit. So the celebration of the Pop-Tart Bowl is they bring out the giant toaster. And then the pastry jumps into the microwave. And no, first the winning team gets to pick the sacrificial Pop-Tarts, right? So then we just make the decision on which, that's the MVP, I believe, of the Pop-Tart Bowl.
Okay.
So we get to decide which Pop-Tart is going to be sacrificed, which flavor. So the one that does, it's like a ritual, man. It's like you go to some third world country and a ritual of an indigenous tribe that's out there. You know, sacrifices something
to a god.
Yeah, right. So the Pop-Tart jumps into the pig toaster. The smoke comes out. Then all of a sudden, this humongous flavor of whatever Pop-Tart is chose comes out of the microwave, like from the side.
Yeah, like an edible Pop-Tart. Yeah,
exactly. And then the whole team gets to just diverge into it.
Diverge.
Indulge into it. Yeah, Pop-Tart. So, I mean, how Notre Dame want to skip out on that? I don't know. I don't really know. I mean, Marcus Freeman, I mean, I think it was left up to a team vote, but you robbed the seniors of the prestigious Notre Dame and South Bend, Indiana, the opportunity of their last moments on football fields to be able to depict the sacrificial Pop-Tart. And then to enjoy eating the said mascot who just 10 seconds earlier jumped into a toaster.
Let me ask you,
give himself up.
If Georgia were in the same position, would you be ticked if we didn't get in the playoff and would we pout the same way that Notre Dame has, do you think?
No, you go beat Florida State by 60 points.
Boom. That's it.
Same position 2 years ago.
In fact, we were screwed up more than Notre Dame was.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, that's what's so wild about this, man. It's all political like the rest of the world in the sense of that. Man, 2 years ago, Georgia loses 12-0 regular season record, loses by 3 points conference championship game, drops, what, 5 spots?
Yeah, 1-6.
Ohio State, same deal, loses by 3 points, drops a spot, number 2.
Yeah, the heck?
I mean, and stuff like that. But anyway, but going back to Notre Dame, Georgia being left out, they go, not even a question. They're playing in their bowl game. Guys play, and you win 6-33.
Mm-hmm. You don't pout. Although you could. You deserve to pout.
Yeah.
You don't pout.
I don't know, man. I don't like that. I think they left it up to a vote, but I still think you should just play because these are still young adults, and you got to learn about stuff that don't go your way in life all the time. There's going to be adversity, and it's how you respond to it.
Mm-hmm.
But this is just, you know, picking up their ball and going back home.
Yeah.
Just a terrible way to handle it. Lost a lot of respect after I didn't like Notre Dame. Then I went to South Bend. fans were nice. Now I don't like Notre Dame again.
I'll tell you, I saw something really funny on Twitter today. There was a GIF, a G-I-F, however you guys say it, GIF or GIF. Anyway, it was of the movie Rudy, and if you've ever seen it, you see the guys, the players, going into the coach's office, laying down their jersey, and they said, the caption was, this is Notre Dame football this week. You know, all the guys going in there, they're done. They're hanging it up for the season, but your Georgia Bulldogs are not. There's no question that the Dogs are in the playoff. We quite literally are in the playoff now. But there was really never any doubt for this team, I don't think. So,
never any doubt, man. Clark, I'll just tell you right now, again, you got to pinch yourself as a Georgia fan. Many years we've gotten to this point in the season where we've said that. Another time where we're going into the Christmas season to enjoy it. Then right after Christmas, you got to focus on the Georgia National Championship run. Mm. Another prestigious primetime New Year's Six college football playoff bowl game that Georgia will be in. And, man, now the difference from last year is you got a team that's playing its best ball. Clark, we said in the preview episode, we said at the beginning of the year, all it's got to win a national championship in this 12-team playoff, you got to be healthy, you got to get hot at the right time, and you got to have some luck. Mm-hmm. Georgia is in a great spot to be healthier than a lot of teams.
Yep.
You know, and then also, though, to be on fire at the right time.
Yeah.
So the way these guys have matured, the way that these guys have stepped in and playing key roles right now, where this team is on both sides of the football, couldn't be more excited as a fan, man. We're living in the glory days. Can't say it enough. University of Georgia's back-to-back SEC champions, man. Go out and buy those shirts, man. There'll be back-to-back shirts out there. Go out and buy some posters to hang on the wall. Celebrate being SEC champions because it means something, man. This is a game that we talked about earlier. Might not be around for a whole lot longer, but you could say that Georgia dominated the end of its run, and it's a hard game to win. Sometimes it's harder to win this game than it is at the national championship, but Georgia's done it again. Back-to-back SEC championships over 16 teams again for the second year in a row. How many SEC teams are in the college football playoff? Like five, six?
Five, yeah, I think.
Something like five like that. So, I mean, the toughest conference in America is Georgia's dominated 2 years in a row, man. Unreal, but hey, we're not done yet, Clark. That's not done yet. Gear up. Take a little break. We got some time to recover as fans.
Yes.
Not only as the team does, but as fans to enjoy this holiday season. And then it'll be time to get back focused for a Georgia win in New Orleans yet again against Tulane or Ole Miss, man. Cannot wait, but cannot wait for the episodes that will have between now and then. We got some stuff lined up, Clark. It's going to be awesome. Golly, we're blessed. Can't believe it. It is always great to be a Georgia Bulldog. How about them Dogs, baby?
Go Dogs.